This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Welcome to this Joy 94.9 podcast.
We want to hear from you.
It's time for our listener survey. So head to the Joy website and let us know what you love about the station and your presenters.
Maybe you'd like to share your thoughts on Joy's program production team, the volunteers behind Joy Podcasts.
The results of this survey will assist us in continuing to be the best possible station we can be.
Head to joy.org.au and have your say. Joy 94.9, your voice, your radio station.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the Worldwide Wave.
Good evening. This is Worldwide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show, taking you around the globe one country at a time. In the studio with me tonight, Paul is here.
Good evening.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
And I am Matt. 30 years ago, those talking about HIV were speaking about survival. Dealing with old age was not a problem that anyone considered. To show you just how far things have come in a relatively short period of time, tonight we're talking about new research on the effects of HIV and ageing.
Is this accelerated ageing due to the virus or the drugs we're using to fight it?
Could it be that HIV treatment centres could be used to improve general health in third world countries?
And what could this research tell us all about the way the human body ages? Opening this Pandora's box with us tonight is Dr. Alan Lande, head of the Department of Immunology at Rush University Medical Center in Chicago. He's been involved in HIV research for over 30 years, having performed some of the first immune evaluations of HIV-infected haemophiliacs in 1982. And here's a taste of what you have coming up tonight.
What we're trying to do is use resources we've already built for HIV studies and HIV care in these populations and open up clinics where the patients who are being seen for HIV now are going to be looked at for their cardiovascular disease, looked at for their diabetes. And those clinics and infrastructure resources can clearly be expanded to help in the non-HIV populations as well.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities, from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
First of all, we're off to Norway, where the King of Norway has given a perfect message of love and acceptance to pro-LGBT speech. The King of Norway gave a speech sending a message of acceptance to LGBT people and refugees. King Harald V made his speech to 1,500 guests at a garden party he was hosting.
So this was quite a broad-ranging speech of being welcoming and being, I guess, a complex country. He talked about different ages, different genders, just difference in general. It was fantastic.
There's a lovely quote that he says, "Norwegians are girls who love girls, boys who love boys, and boys and girls that love each other."
And he then goes on to talk about immigration and immigrants from Afghanistan, Pakistan, Poland, Sweden, Somalia and Syria are all a part of the Norwegian family. You are Norway, we are Norway. My biggest hope for Norway is that we will manage to take care of each other, that we can build this country further on trust, solidarity and generosity.
I just wonder if Queen Lizzie will follow suit.
Or the Governor General would do.
Closer to home, in the Northern Territories, Australia has its first openly gay Aboriginal parliamentarian. In the Northern Territory election last week, it saw the ascension of the national first openly gay Indigenous Member of Parliament. And Chansey Paich is a 28-year-old Labour Member of Legislative Assembly, received almost 60% of the vote in the electorate of Namatjira in Central Australia, which is the third largest in the Northern Territories and covers an area bigger than Victoria and Tassie combined.
I think this is just huge. He's young. He's in a very remote rural setting. He's gay, and he got 60% of the vote.
It's amazing. And especially,
it just didn't make any of the mainstream news services either.
No. And he's taken over from the really conservative vote as well. I mean, this is a huge...
Indeed. In fact, some of his opponents in the election tried to use his sexuality, tried to make it as an issue. And he says that kind of language in this electorate didn't, the electorate didn't respond well to. It was the most beautiful thing was that when I was at a remote community campaigning, the people said to me, they said you were a gay and we said we didn't care. We just want houses.
Yeah. He says he'll use public office to advocate for more support for those who are struggling with their sexuality, particularly Indigenous people.
Some not so good news now in Uganda, where a girl who is only 8 years old, is in police custody after being accused of lesbianism. Police from the Child Family Protection Unit based in the eastern region of Jinja are claiming that the girl was seeking romantic relationships with other girls. She cannot be named, but she was reported by her neighbour who said she watched her trying to lure girls into a nearby farm.
It's so crazy. I mean, even that description of luring girls in.
And the fact that they've also gone public with it says that they're turning this into something of a political story. Police are investigating the claims that somebody could have, quote, influenced the girl and instructed her to pass on the knowledge to her friends.
Don't forget that both male and female homosexuality is illegal in Uganda. Although lesbianism was only criminalised in 2000, they're always a bit late getting there.
Indeed. Not good news at all. But some better news across to the UK.
Where 14 gay priests have actually revealed that they got married, which is against the doctrine of the Church of England.
The Church of England. So it's not the Catholic Church. We should point that out. That would be quite a story.
So they've revealed that they've got secretly married in defiance of the Archbishop of Canterbury. I'm sure he's rather... miffed.
And they revealed it in a not-so-secret way. They penned an open letter, and indeed for some of them it was their coming out. So some were already out there and people knew, but for some of them it was the first time that others, including the bishop, knew.
The letter calls for the church to move away from harm and hurt that has so often been done in the name of the church, and to respect that there's a diversity of theology within the church which now exists.
And in brief, the town of Moorhead, Kentucky in the USA, which is the hometown of Kim Davis. Remember the county clerk who refused to issue the marriage licenses for same-sex couples? Well, that town has put their finger up to her and held its first ever pride parade, including a drag impersonator of Kim herself.
And there's outrage in New Zealand at the Ministry of Health's guidelines for gender reassignment surgery that could have some people waiting 50 years for surgery.
Northern Ireland has officially ended its lifetime ban on gay men providing blood.
And in Hong Kong, a survey has found that 76% of people look favourably upon politicians supporting LGBT rights, while 52% would look unfavourably on those who oppose it. And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, this is Janne, Mr. Gay Finland, and you are listening on the Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
We are talking HIV and ageing tonight. Hey, we've had a new person joining us on Facebook. Actually, we've had quite a few this week. But James, welcome, James. W3Joy on Facebook will send you news stories from around the world right throughout the week.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
Now, we are talking HIV and ageing, and because this is such a new area, there's not actually a lot of things we can draw from in terms of fun, fast facts.
No, there's almost nothing known yet. It's brand new.
We are cutting edge.
Brand spanking new, yeah.
But we thought we'd sort of look at ageing and the LGBT community in terms of our fun, fast facts tonight. And in fact, we found a Victorian report from earlier, but 2002, looking at the difference in health issues to do with or comparing LGBTI people with the general population. This report found one of the, I guess, concerns of the LGBT community was invisibility in the aged care sector, and it's probably something that's still there.
Yeah, I imagine so. I mean, it must get better as we... As this generation is aging, I imagine it'll get better. But people talked about being scared to be forced back in the closet.
Indeed. And it's an international thing as well. So many international studies showed similar sorts of things. Equally, though, within our own community, ageism within the LGBTI community. So
well, I was going to say, as a fairly mature member of the community.
Older and bolder.
Yes. I do feel like I have disappeared somewhat from the representations of the community.
And it's that's that youth-focused, chiselled body thing that we see in the gay papers and online.
Good job you're volunteering on Joy then to get that diversity in.
Very true. There was also discussions too about exclusion from LGBTI networks. So those sorts of support and social networks that our community does have, there was a fear of being excluded from them. Maybe sort of along the same lines as the nightclub type thing.
Yeah, there's a perception that they're youth-based or youth-driven, and that when LGBT people enter the middle age, they feel like they've been increasingly excluded.
I suspect that happens across a lot of people. Yeah, like I know my mother feels the same way. That you suddenly become invisible, especially women when they are no longer sexually desirable.
Yes, it's probably not unique to the LGBT.
Oh, that's tough, isn't it?
Yeah, there was some
sexual desire there with somebody, I would think.
There was a really cool research on what's called menopause, and killer whales also have menopause. They're like, there's only three animals.
Where do you get this stuff from?
I don't know. It was interesting that it's given women a new lease of life, realizing they're still useful
to whales.
Past. Well, because they found that whales who go through menopause are more supportive of the younger generations.
Is that because the whales live long enough to actually get to that stage?
No, because chimps do as well.
Have they done a study between straight whales and LGBTI whales yet?
I think that's coming. That's next on the agenda.
Back to our Victorian study.
Sorry.
The locals here, institutionalised aged care was a big issue and lots of facets with that. A fear of physical and emotional abuse if they disclosed their sexual orientation and gender identity.
And a reduced standard of care as a consequence of the prejudicial attitudes on the part of some of the carers.
Being forced back in the closet, which we've already mentioned, and treated inappropriately because of things that may be, I guess, foreign to a lot of aged care professionals in terms of being transgender or intersex.
The lack of intimacy because of taboos about same-sex affection.
Can't hold hands.
And the attitude of religious service providers as they become increasingly involved in the delivery of aged care services.
Now, interestingly, where this fits in with our show tonight is that HIV and, I guess, related health conditions didn't rank.
No, they didn't come up at all in these worries.
So this was done, 10 or more years ago, but it shows you the rapid change that is going on in this area as well. We're investigating HIV and ageing on World Wide Wave.
Hi, this is Tamás from Hardcore Society, fighting for the human rights of the LGBTQI community in Hungary on the World Wide Wave.
New HIV treatments have led to a generation that once saw this virus as a death sentence to now look at it as manageable. On the positive side, HIV treatments have greatly improved life expectancy to the point where, in Australia and a few other first world countries, we have announced the end of AIDS, but not of HIV. However, new research led by Chicago's Rush University Medical Center suggests that people with HIV might be aging at a faster rate than the general population. We asked the head of the Department of Immunology at Rush University, Dr. Alan Landay, what his research was showing.
What we're trying to understand more about is the role of the persistent immune dysfunction in the aging population with HIV, and this is a phenomenon known as inflammation and also called inflammaging. It's a process that occurs during healthy aging but appears to be accelerated in the HIV population, so that at a younger age we're seeing evidence of inflammation and senescence of the immune system at an earlier time frame than we would see in a normal, healthy, aging population. And so what the issues are clinically that the HIV population are now going to be facing are those related to serious non-AIDS events that are occurring, the most prominent of which has been cardiovascular disease, metabolic disease, including diabetes, bone disease, and cancer, and neurocognitive decline. So we're trying to understand is what are the contributing factors in the HIV patients who are treated effectively, virologically suppressed, and for the most part have a good CD4 T-cell immune reconstitution.
Is there any gender difference between men and women in terms of how they are responding?
We are beginning to look at that. We are studying cohorts in the U.S. and other populations and finding, even from the basic immunology perspective, that there may be differences between men and women. There's especially an important component in women that we have reproductive aging effects and changes in hormonal effects, such as loss of estrogen during menopause. It may amplify some of the changes in terms of the things like bone disease that occur in postmenopausal women, that when we see these same issues in HIV-positive women, they may be more accelerated. We're also beginning to understand or study, is the actual timing of menopause different in our HIV-positive population than a negative one? And I think that's a critical question as well. We're just beginning to address and gain more data on.
And that was Dr. Alan Lande from Rush University in the USA explaining how men and women differ in aging with HIV. And coming up, we asked Dr. Lande whether it is the virus or the drugs that are giving these changes in aging.
Hola, soy Unax Ugalde y estás escuchando la primera y única estación de radio gay y lésbica de Australia, Joy 94.9.
I'm Stefan from Taiwan. You're listening to Worldwide Wave.
Tonight we're talking new research, brand new research, showing a link between HIV and aging. And could it be that those miracle drugs that are keeping HIV positive alive are also aging them at a faster rate? So we asked Alan whether he knew yet if it was the HIV virus or the antiretroviral drugs being used to fight HIV that were causing these aging effects.
It's multifactorial, and that's a great question because we know we can suppress the virus by our current techniques, but those techniques really measure the virus in the blood. And so we're down to studying at a clinical level less than 20 copies of HIV in the blood, which means you're what we now say clinically virologically suppressed. Well, 20 copies isn't zero, so we do know that if we use more sensitive research assays, single copy assays, we may find virus in the blood. But more importantly, there may be viral reservoirs in tissue, and that includes the gastrointestinal tract, which is a main site for a lot of the potential inflammatory mediators. So we're now beginning to ask questions about the effects of our current drug regimens. Do they get into the tissues effectively? How well do they suppress the virus? And how well do they reconstitute the immune system? And so we're asking those key questions using more sophisticated research techniques. We haven't yet moved to the clinic level of asking not just about viral load, but also viral RNA and viral DNA, newer research techniques that allow us to study different replicative parts of the HIV life cycle and help to address that particular question. In terms of the drugs, that's also a critical question because we know in the past the various drugs known as the D drugs, DDI, D4T, DDC, had metabolic toxicities. We also know a number of the protease inhibitors caused lipid abnormalities. What we now find today, people starting in 2016, the regimens are much more friendly in terms of the toxicity profile. They're less toxic. But we still have a large number of patients who were starting treatment in the early days, in the late 80s, early 90s, and they're still alive today because of the tremendous advances in our abilities to treat patients, especially with the first heart regimens that came out in 1995. So many of those patients are, you know, still here today in 2016 who were starting then. You know, they were 30 then, and they're 50 today. So they're now aging. And so the sort of long-term effects of some of the exposures to drugs, as well as the aspects of chronologic aging, are contributing to some of these factors.
So we could see people in their, you know, 40s or 50s with cardiovascular disease or dementia or things like that as a result of a long-term...
Well, that's still an open-ended question. We do know that there's an acceleration of immune senescence early on and that the immune system is affected. Now, how that manifests clinically is still under investigation and hasn't, as we call, the jury is still out. So we ask a question, and we've written many reviews, is HIV accelerating aging? Is it accentuating aging? And the other question is, are there other lifestyle factors in our population that may be contributing to cardiovascular disease? So do the patients that we're studying, do they smoke more or do they have more alcohol consumption? Some of those factors are normal risk factors for cardiovascular disease, for instance. So we have to control for all of those aspects, and that's what we're beginning to look at in a number of our cohorts. And when we do the actual clinical studies, we need to be very careful about the control populations we compare HIV patients to be sure that what we're seeing is truly a disease process effect and not just simply a lifestyle factor in that population. As I mentioned, smoking and alcohol being two big ones, and also nutrition. That's another big part of what we're interested in terms of how nutrition affects these outcomes.
What are the implications for our health systems? And I guess, is it different for a rich country like Australia compared to a third world country that may not have the health system that we have here?
I think that's actually very important, because these are going to be, we want to be able to prevent these comorbidities because they are going to have a significant effect in the healthcare systems in a country like Australia. And these patients are going to, you know, they're living longer, so they're going to need more health care, perhaps more interventional strategies. So what we're trying to figure out is what can we do to intervene and prevent so that patients who come in today to be started on therapy, if they have a higher risk for any of these comorbid conditions, can we give them prevention up front, like a statin or an aspirin, something as a simple regimen, so that in the long term the health care effects in dollars, we won't have a tremendous effect on health care dollars, even in, you know, in places like Australia. In the developing world, let's say Africa is one example, we're also seeing more of the non-communicable diseases in general. And when we sit down and when we had at the Durban AIDS meeting this year in Africa, there was a lot of interest in non-communicable diseases from the perspective of the World Health Organization, because what we're seeing now is, on a global basis, we're dealing more with these non-communicable diseases than we are infectious diseases in Africa, even in the non-HIV populations, given the changes in westernization of a lot of the diets, a lot more diabetes and cardiovascular disease. So these are now going to be found in not just the general population, but also in the HIV population. So how in that healthcare system, which is much less resourced than in Australia, how we're going to be able to implement that, that's going to be much more difficult. What we're trying to do is use resources we've already built for HIV studies and HIV care in these populations and open up clinics where the patients who are being seen for HIV now are going to be looked at for their cardiovascular disease, looked at for their diabetes. And those clinics and infrastructure resources can clearly be expanded to help in the non-HIV populations as well. So this is a great example where building infrastructure, which Australia and many other countries have done across the world, not just in Africa, but in Asia Pacific and other places now, especially places like New Guinea, which is very much involved with Australia research and evaluation, that we can begin to implement these kinds of infrastructure changes.
That's Dr. Alan Landay from Rush University Medical Center in Chicago with groundbreaking new research into HIV and aging. That concept, I think of all the investment that the world, billions and billions of dollars, has put into fighting HIV, and you think about countries that, even countries that aren't accepting of gay people, have taken on HIV, most of them, as a health issue. Yep. And they've set up clinics and they've done testing and they've done all that. And this idea that investment could now be used to deliver general health, to actually, you know, improve the health of nations.
Well, when you think about it, what's been done for HIV, a very small amount is the bit that's around HIV testing and drugs. There's all the roads built to the clinic, the training of the nurses, the
training of the population to think about their health as well.
Absolutely.
In countries where it's probably a lower order issue.
Yeah, I think it's just
It's more basic than that, actually building the clinics and having the buildings.
Having a shed to go to, which has got a sign on the front.
And some way to keep things cool. It's a fantastic way of getting more bang for your buck for all of the aid that's already gone in to have other countries really take hold of their healthcare.
It is something for Australia, where we have, and many other countries like us, I guess, an ageing population. We have, the baby boomers about to hit that, old age era where ailments become bigger more often, and, our health system's going to be strained. So it's slightly scary or concerning that we could add another layer whereby somebody who's HIV positive could be getting ailments they shouldn't be getting at the age of 50.
Absolutely. But I thought some of what Alan said was really interesting, that some of these people who are 50 now started on drugs that were much more toxic than someone starting on drugs today would get. So
we're making progress.
Yeah, we're making progress, and people today might not get that aging in the same way as older people who've been on the drugs longer.
So it's like a lag effect that's coming through. I mean, look, as much as, HIV has been such a big issue, the way the speed at which the world has been able to generate change in this, because it's really only been 30-odd years.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's amazing, amazing.
People are still alive who discovered the virus. I just find that just fascinating.
Now, the other issue that I was thinking of, didn't get to ask this, but was thinking of, if it is, that question of, is it the virus or is it the drugs? Because a little bit of a scary thought as to which one is causing this, either accentuating or accelerating of aging. If it's the drugs, and we're now using the basis of those drugs as a preventative tool now, with PrEP as opposed to PEP.
Could that
mean we're bringing in more issues?
The drugs he was talking about that he thinks might have led to aging, that he said it causes lipid problems and metabolic, that's kind of your fats. So they'll be the ones that might be leading to heart disease and heart attacks. Those ones aren't the ones that are in PrEP. So the ones in PrEP are the safest ones we have, that when you give them to people, you see the least changes in their body. So it's unlikely. I think it would be unlikely that they'd cause a problem at this point, but we don't know. I think it's still likely that just having the virus there hiding in your cells is going to be causing the issues.
This is all new, and you're hearing it here first on World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Geoditch. Hello, this is Rosie Fagan speaking to you all the way from Belfast in Northern Ireland on World Wide Wave.
Now, we were talking volunteers before. Hey, there's a new role going, a volunteer role, or maybe two, assistant music director. So if you know your tunes, get onto the Joy website. You'll be liaising with record companies, PR reps, organising interviews, and helping to shape the sound of Joy.
I think I just disqualify myself with the music choice.
Yeah, you're out. Yeah. And if it was me, it'd be all 80s. So, I think somebody else should apply. Joy.org.au is the place to go.
Joy.
Tonight we are talking HIV and ageing.
Dr. Alan Landy's research has focused on HIV. We asked him if, through his research, he'd learned more about the broader human ageing process.
Absolutely. I think we're asking questions now in our HIV populations that are going to have broader applications to the non-HIV populations. And we're going to be able to learn a lot more about the aspects of immune aging and outcomes related to that. We're really looking at this new concept that came up 10 years ago in the HIV field called the leaky gut and microbial translocation. And that really came from the HIV field and has really begun to be looked at much more broadly in aging in general. And I can say many of my colleagues here in Australia are studying aging populations based on what we learned in HIV, applying a number of the concepts
a number of the new tools and perhaps new biomarkers that can be used to help aging patients as well in terms of prevention strategies for some of these comorbidities. This newer concept is that in HIV, it targets the gut, causes changes in gut permeability, release of products to the systemic circulation of the bacteria, and causes the inflammation. We now are thinking this also happens in the normal aging process. Now, what actually initiates that in healthy aging, we don't know, but we can show that in a 70-year-old healthy individual, their levels of these microbial products are equivalent to that in a 50-year-old HIV patient. And so what we've begun to learn in HIV and think about from an interventional strategy, we're also learning about other viruses that may be involved in aging, such as cytomegalovirus, and that's a virus that we're now studying more of in HIV and thinking about it as well in the aging population. It's a herpes virus that can also drive immune senescence. So I think there's just a lot to be learned from HIV that can be applied to aging in general, and we're really creating great synergies between HIV clinicians and gerontologists, people who study aging and take care of older individuals.
Dr. Alan Landay from Rush University Health Center in Chicago, thanks for joining us on Worldwide Wave.
Thank you.
I'm kind of scared and maybe even a little bit confused. This gut issue, I had no idea this was such a big central, you know, piece of our body that has, you know, potential to drive so much frailty.
Yeah, it's very common. This leaky gut issue, it's a big research area now. And lots of people's, you know, grandparents or parents might be having heard about diverticulitis. It's like where stuff gets stuck in a pocket of your gut. And then it can cause inflammation just in that area. But also your gut, you know, it ages like we do. Like your skin gets a bit paper thin as you get older. Your gut's getting like that. And little bacteria and little peptides, little bits of stuff get out, and your body starts fighting that. So it's constantly at war. Like if you think when you cut yourself on your hand and you get an infection, it's all red and inflamed and hot. Just think about that throughout your body at a really low level. So it's a huge problem as we age that our bodies are exhausting themselves trying to fight leaky gut.
And all sorts of other things. I guess the older you get, the more things happen. When they do happen, the bigger they are, they're bigger than...
Yeah, it's also because your immune system goes to sleep. So I know my grandmother, she just kept getting cold after cold, and they finally figured out she just doesn't make antibodies anymore. It's what we have to... That's how vaccines work, is that you make something that can target...
Something can fight it.
Yeah, and you just stop making them as you get older. Your immune system goes to sleep. That's what senescence means that Alan Landay was talking about a few times. It's just all gone to sleep. You need to wake it back up, people.
So there are some interesting things coming out of this research, and we will keep track of these as they find out a bit more. You're on World Wide Wave.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
Hi, this is Robin Tyler, and I am a producer. I'm an activist. I'm a comic, and I'm also legally married to my wife, Diane Olson, for over 7 years on the World Wide Wave.
A big thank you to our guest tonight, Dr. Alan Landay, the head of the Department of Immunology at Rush University Medical Center in Chicago. You can find out more about the work that they're doing there at rush.edu.
And thank you on Facebook for our messages from Winston, Anton, Hope, Lorraine, Trent and a heap more who've joined or interacted with us on Facebook this past week. That's W3Joy on Facebook.
We'd like to thank our podcaster, Mark, and also the lovely Gordon on the front desk.
We will catch you next week on Worldwide Wave.
Thanks for listening to another podcast of the Worldwide Way, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. Worldwide Way is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australia time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne or online at joy.org.au. You'll find all of our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwide wave. or follow us on Facebook for latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
Joy 94.9, Australia's best radio station.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.